It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Second hour here, the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Paul Kaharsky in today for Robbie Stanley, and very happy to welcome in our usual Thursday guest, bumped to Friday, because he spent some time yesterday with a team of high interest around here. We will get into that. Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. Charles, are you now convinced that as a Houston resident, your Houston Texans are going to win the Super Bowl?
My. I love
that's your squad,
man.
Because, that's your squad.
Because I live here. look, they're going to be a problem. I don't think there's any question, you know, going out there and looking at just the totality of talent, getting a look at kind of what Mixon is, where he's fitting on the field, what he's looking like, you know, how decisive he's, you know, running early in camp, kind of seeing how Diggs is fitting in. Tank Dell coming back, obviously, from season-ending injury. They look fantastic. I mean, I was surprised at not only the health of the team, but just how, you know, even some of the players, like left guard Kenyon Green, who was a first-round pick. They've been waiting, basically, for Green to round into form. I mean, he was just pummeling guys yesterday. That was kind of a shock to me. You know, right tackle Titus Howard, like their lines, really the thing that's up in the air, but there's competition now pushing that kid. Will Anderson, I was shocked to see Will Anderson at 263. I mean, and you can see it in him. He's definitely, you know, he's added at least 15 pounds. I mean, they had him listed at 243 last year. He said he played at 248, but he kind of felt like he was getting ragdolled a little bit late in the season. I assume because, you know, he probably worked his weight down a little bit. But yeah, you could see, I mean, he's put on a lot of bulk, and, you know, we'll see how it affects his explosiveness. But, you know, even I watch in practice, and Kamari Lassiter, the Georgia kid, I watch the ones on defense go out, and I see him walk out. I'm like, is this kid a star? They're going to start him? You know, rookie, second-round corner, and he was lining up, you know, across from Tank Dell, and I'm like, oh, Tank Dell's going to kill this kid. And he had his hands full with him, but Lassiter looked great. I mean, I was surprised. I was really stunned at how well he really matched up, going up against Collins at times, Tank Dell. So it looks like, you know, they may have found a starting cornerback as a rookie. They just looked, I told you last week, you know, the Lions and the Texans, I have questions about both being able to really catch all the green lights they did last season, live up to, you know, all these expectations. And, you know, I just, after watching the Texans in person, again, it's one practice, haven't been any injuries yet, but they look like they've hit the ground running. Like they're everything that they've been cracking.
I know they're not in pads yet by any means, but I'm wondering how scared you would think the rest of the division and the rest of the conference should be when you're talking about Will Anderson bulked up and he's playing with Danielle Hunter and Danico Autry and Fadukasi and even Derek Burnett and Mario Edwards. That is a very strong frontline group with some good depth behind it. And to me, maybe the most impressive unit in the franchise.
Did we lose Charles? I think we may have lost Charles. His answer cut off.
There we go.
Oh, no, wait, yeah,
he is. I got fat cheeks, and I hit the mute button with my giant fat face. Paul would have heard me agreeing with him wholeheartedly. Yeah, I mean, the depth is great. I mean, the addition of Hunter and Autry and, you know, Mario Edwards, you know, was looking good yesterday. I mean, just from a rotational aspect, the depth along that front line is – is really, really nice. I think, too, the thing is they have like $15 million plus in cap space. Titans fans probably don't want to hear this. I mean, although I would say a lot of fans don't want to hear this. Let's watch and see what happens with Justin Simmons, because I think there's going to be – I think the Texans are going to poke around and see if they can make maybe a late veteran addition as they get closer to the season. Like Nick Caserio, when you listened to him yesterday, you know, he made it pretty clear they're definitely still, you know, scraping the free agents to see, you know, if someone wants to make a decision. And I know it seems to me like Simmons is sort of waiting to see what he's going to have a few teams that are interested. How would he be positioned on a roster? And how much of camp can he miss, you know, sit out as much of camp as possible. But I think that's a guy they could target. I think they're looking at maybe seeing if some other veterans maybe become available in a trade at some point in camp. So I don't think they're done adding. I think that cap space, they could potentially still use that. So, and another thing too, that like Bobby Slowik is, he's going to have job offers, and you know, he's already positioned for it. Unless there are injuries or, you know, something really craters with this offense, I think the continuity of having him back and not losing him over the off season is a big deal. So even from a coaching perspective, you know, D'Amico Ryans is who he is. I think he's, I've always had a lot of admiration for him. I think he's lived up to, you know, that billing. And it's just when you go in and you see a front office that's really performing well, you see a coaching staff that's pretty stacked, they'll get poached eventually, but they haven't yet. And then the roster kind of going the way that it's going, the direction that's going. It, for the Texans to not advance on that 10-win season this year would be a pretty significant, I think, disappointment.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask about the safety market, because obviously Jamal Adams signs with the Titans.
Right, yeah.
Not to me, not an especially inspired – it's fine. It's a flyer,
yeah,
it's a flyer on a guy who can maybe do something in particular looks
sure, situationally,
you.
Yeah.
But they,
yeah,
I still feel like the Titans are among the teams that really need that safety help. Now, Justin Simmons, it just seems my read on Justin Simmons is he's just right now the price tag's too high, and he probably knows that someone's going to get hurt in camp, and there's going to be a more acute need from somebody to get him. What about him? What about Quandre Diggs as well and his situation? And I guess, I don't know, would you anticipate the Titans being among the teams that still could sign someone significant at that position?
Yeah, that's absolutely. That's why I brought them up, you know, when I said that, you know, something Titans fans might not want to hear about Simmons. Yeah, that is a guy that I think they'll tell you. Look, Colts are poking around the safety market right now. Both the guys you mentioned are going to draw some interest there. I think the Texans, even though the Texans return both of their starting safeties, I think it's like Simmons is an impactful player. He can play well. It's just, it's about the price tag, as you said, right now. And so I truly think the Titans are a team that could be in play for him. I think the Texans really will be in play for him. I think the Colts will be in play for him. I think there will be other teams that, as you said, either through injury or just sort of getting eyes on how guys are functioning in the secondary, there will be other teams in play for him. He's going to draw, you know, some interest. And right now it is a price tag issue, but I think it's also an issue of him wanting to go where he's going to be able to maximize the time he has left, get money, win games. You know, it's sort of, I guess I would in some ways compare it to like the last few years when Ndamukong Suh was still, you know, a player that had interest from multiple franchises would sit there and kind of wait and see, you know, where do I want to go? Where can I have the most impact and stretch my remaining years? So Simmons is definitely in that boat. But, yeah, I do think the Titans, I think that's the right read. I think Titans will be in a safety market as we kind of hit the middle of camp and some of these veterans start to pick places where they think they can flourish.
One more on the Texans. They kind of took joint flyers on reclamation corners in C.J. Henderson and Jeff Okuda.
Yeah.
Do you think they will hit on one or two of those guys, and what do you think about that strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I have questions about it, definitely. You know, to see Lassiter out there with the first team defense the way that he was, you know, it kind of made me feel like Lassiter and Derek Stingley Jr. are probably the two I would definitely count on right now. I think, and you know, it's not like I know the staff is super high in Lassiter too, so I'm not just it's not just from watching practice alone, but you know, Okuda is definitely a player that. You know, they know he has talent, you know, for whatever reason, he just has not been able to put it together. Still a very, very young player. I would think he is the one that if, as you said, you know, they take a flyer and they get a guy who can sort of put it together and not have as much pressure. You know, he's one that I think they're looking at and watching him out there yesterday. Again, you can see, you know, there's you can see what he brings to the table. It's just, you know, can he be decisive? You know, can he understand the coverages? It's mystifying to me, as good as he was at Ohio State, that he has performed at such a mediocre level. You know, injuries early in his career, I think, affected that. But I also, when you talk to the franchises, you know, that he's gone through, there's a confidence issue there that – maybe it gets resolved in Houston just because, as you said, they're not really pushing a lot of chips on him. It's not like they're sitting there going, this is a guy we absolutely have to count on. And again, I really do think that the way Lassiter's played is really going to help them in that situation. But I, you know, I've seen some people kind of pencil him in Okuda as a starter at corner. Let's wait and see. You know, and Henderson, I don't know what to tell you about Henderson. I mean, there's just a lot that's always kind of going on with him. And, you know, I think some of that is confidence. I think some of it is sort of off the field stuff. And, you know, for him, it's sort of the same situation. They're not, if they get something out of him, I think they'll be happy with it. If not, I wouldn't be absolutely shocked to see him be one of those guys that's a bubble guy by the end of camp.
So I'm kind of out, although quarterback was good, but I'm kind of out on, you know, the reality show stuff around the NFL. I think Hard Knocks has seen better days. The NFL
teams you don't like the offseason Hard Knocks?
I've heard, first of all, I definitely am going to catch up on receiver because and that's different. But so, yeah, so I've heard, have you watched this, PK, the Giants? So I've heard good things.
I'm behind.
Okay.
I watched Shane Bowen's introduction, which was interesting.
That's right. You talked about that. Yeah. So
and
it's
I
good,
think
though,
Joe Shane, it's not making Joe Shane look great, I don't think. What do you think, Charles?
He's coming off as very nerdy in this, like, definitely. And you know, you talk about Shane and I think you see some alpha qualities in the room, and like Shane kind of comes off as, I don't want to say a beta, but he's not like every other general, I don't want to say every other general manager, but a lot of general managers who rule the room the second that they walk in, you know, and some people might like that because he seems like he's a little bit of a collaborative guy. I think what's been really interesting is, it gives, and this has been underplayed, I think, when people have talked about it, it gives you a little bit of a window of what a pain it can be like dealing with an owner who has an infatuation with a player. And to see how John Mara has talked to Shane, you know, continually bringing up Saquon Barkley, saying some of the things that he said about, you know, oh, you know, Saquon ends up with the Philly, I'm going to have a hard time sleeping at night. And like, he meant it. And you're sitting there and you're watching Shane kind of have these interactions, and it's clear he wants to move on. And some of the things that he says when you watch it, you know, not wanting to pay a $40 million quarterback to pay off to, you know, hand off to a $12 million running back. Like, to me, that's clear as a bell. And then yet you kind of have this owner who's like, he's just such a great guy and he's our most popular player ever. And I'm like, wow, there's like shades of like Jerry Jones and Ezekiel Elliott, like kind of watching this. And I don't think you get to see as often as it happens. I don't think you get to see kind of owners knocking on a general manager's door and being like, well, what's going on with Saquon? And man, he's such a popular player. And like, you know, you can just feel personnel people rolling their eyes like, oh my God, I know he's a popular player, but like, what are the economics of the position? You can see Joe Shane's like, here's who's going to be available. Here are these other running backs that are going to be economic, you know, more economical signings. At one point, Joe Shane brings up in like a casual conversation, he talks about all the carries Saquon had in Penn State. And then all the, you know, the mileage that's been put on him in the NFL already. It's just fascinating to see how, you know, general managers approach the running back position, but an owner who's like, he's our best player on offense and he's so popular, and the struggle that often happens, I think, in that dynamic, that relationship where you have a GM who's trying to get across, hey, you know, like this, we for the bang for the buck is not necessarily there for this player, but an owner clearly wanting to retain a guy, and being, I mean, it's just a delicate kind of dance between the owner and the general manager. I think it's been a very good, you know, Hard Knocks. And to me, between that and receiver and, like you said, the quarterback series, we're getting a lot of information now that's pulling the curtain back on the NFL and the process and the realities of what players really say, what GMs really say. I still think, particularly Hard Knocks, it's measured in terms of what they're doing for the camera. But there are also some moments where that I'm surprised they ultimately don't, you know, leave on the cutting room floor, that make it in, where you're like, okay, here's some genuine stuff that's actually getting in, and fans can really start to understand how front offices work, how teams, like just the, how the sausage is made, you know, in the NFL.
Yeah, I guess I just miss Rex Ryan F-bombing every other word and talking about feet and stuff like that. But, you know, you can't have it all. They all can't be amazing.
It will never – I don't think it will ever beat the moment where you had Hugh Jackson, who's, like, basically having a combative, like, open, like a horrific meeting with his staff, you know, where you're just like watching it and you're like, these guys look like what, like Todd Haley looks like he wants to fight Hugh Jackson right now. You know, like it's just, Freddie Kitchens. I mean, that was such a disaster moment for the Cleveland Browns.
Glorious.
And I literally, I've asked people in the world, like, why did that make it in? How on earth was that? And literally had a guy say to me, he was like, you thought it made him look good. Like, he was like, you thought this makes it, like, it was such a great moment. I'm like, dude, what a disaster.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an all-timer.
I do want to ask you about Barkley, because we've kind of been arguing about this week. I love the gamble for the Eagles, and I think he's – but, yeah, the injury stuff is real. How do you think that's going to work out?
I look – for where he went, I mean, I like, you know, for like of the teams where you're like, all right, there, you know, somebody's going to pay him more than really what the rest of the market would have, you know, bared out elsewhere. I think the Eagles made sense because I think they can definitely maximize what they get out of him. I do worry about the injuries, obviously. Like, that's another thing too, where I think, you know, maybe Joe Shane, particularly when he's talking to Mara, that, you know, I wonder if why it didn't make the show. It's just more of a press on like, hey, he's had some pretty significant injuries already. There is a lot of wear and tear there. And the way the Giants would have used him versus the way the Eagles. See, I think the Eagles, given what they have on offense, given how Jalen Hurts has functioned in the past, I think they can put less wear and tear on him early in a season and then lean on him more down the stretch. I question definitely how that dynamic will work at times, because Jalen Hurts, when he's healthy, really likes to call his number a lot in the run game. And I know the Eagles would like to have that happen less, because I think it for Hurts, it wasn't just, well, he doesn't throw across the middle enough. I think he just wasn't healthy at times for bigger stretches of last year than they really ever fully let on. And I do think some of that is him calling his number a little excessively in the run game, short yardage situations, red zone situations. And so I think, you know, Barkley will be a guy, particularly as they go down the stretch, they'll want to lean on a little bit more. But I just think the depth and the number of weapons they have an ability to make him worth that money. And honestly, Howie pays everybody. He doesn't care. So, I mean, like, at some point, they're going to get themselves into cap trouble, even though people say it's not real. It is real, you know, but he just has an ability to get himself out of it, you know, when they get into that pinch. Where do you guys stand on this? Like, what's the argument?
Well, I like it. I'm big on him making a big difference there, and I'm big on Derrick Henry. You know, making a, I love Derrick Henry with the Ravens.
I think he turns the Eagles. It's got make or break year for Sirianni, and yeah. Barkley's kind of the centerpiece of the whole deal.
Sure. Yeah, I think Paul's right. He almost lost his job last year. Like, that was real. There's the talk down the stretch about, like, you know, is this guy going to make it? And, you know, Belichick's name popping up and, you know, potentially other people. To me, I, you know, knowing how Howie Roseman and the owner have functioned with their head coaches in the past, I knew, like, either Sirianni's going to agree to make coaching staff changes and alterations, or they're going to just go, we'll go get somebody else. Like, that's what happened with Doug Peterson. Like, it literally, Peterson was going into a meeting with the owner, and he was told by, like, Howie, like, hey, man, you need to understand that you're basically going to be told there's got to be alterations to your staff. And Doug was like, I want a Super Bowl. No, I'm not changing my staff anymore. Like, I'm going to make the decisions. Yeah, and that was it. That was the end of it. And so I knew that was the same scenario that was going to break down with Sirianni. Like, is he going to be flexible and make changes to his staff that the ownership wants? And ultimately he was. And I think that's why he comes back this year. But you're right. I think it is a make or break year for him.
And it changes to the staff sound great, but when you change to Kellen Moore, like, okay, that's a change. But
it is a different person. It's a different person.
Yeah. Hey, man, I'm not going to get into the quality of what the decisions ultimately were. I'm just saying, like, they clearly, if you're going to be a head coach there, you need to have a level of flexibility and know that at times the front office and ownership is going to want to push you around a little bit on your coaching staff. So that's why when Bill's name, I thought it was kind of funny when Belichick's name came up, I was like, okay, because it's the same as the Dallas job. I'm like, Belichick comes up for these jobs, and I'm like, even if on the front end, there's this whole sort of remaking of who Bill Belichick is and, like, what his personality is, he's going to be the guy who wants to name who his staff is. And if an owner, I don't care even if it's a new owner or, you know, it's not Robert Kraft, somebody says after 1 year of Belichick or whatever, or even coming in, hey, we want to have some, I want to be able to flex a little bit on you when it comes to who your coaches are going to be. I just can't, unless Belichick is completely desperate all of a sudden, I just can't see him suddenly changing the way he's been for decades when it comes to the coaching staff.
He has been going through some life changes, though.
Is Roseman as secure as could be there? Is he Lurie's guy long term?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Lurie has as much confidence in Howie Roseman as any owner has in any GM in the NFL. And I think it's not just the things that Howie has necessarily done right. I think it goes all the way back to when he weathered the whole Chip Kelly storm, you know, didn't, like, stayed in the building, lost the general manager title, but he was Lurie's guy, you know, through that time, because owners want to be able to have somebody in the building who can explain things, why certain things are going certain ways, or when they have to go and ask a head coach questions, they want to be able to have somebody in the building who goes, here's the smart questions. Here's what you should be asking right now. Here, when you watch film with the coach, here's what you should be concerned about. And in a lot of ways, I think that's what Lurie leans on, you know, Howie for. So it's, I don't want to bang on Howie. I think he's earned, you know, just earn the accolades he gets. I know upsets other general managers, how especially the media seems to celebrate him at every draft, how he wins every draft, look what Howie's doing and all this stuff. But, you know, he's made a lot of shrewd moves that have positioned them right. And I still think that what we saw last year from them, part of it was a Sirianni problem. Part of it was a Jalen Hurts not being healthy problem. You know, it was an underwhelming season, but I think it wasn't just because it's all falling apart.
Talking to Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. Last thing, Charles, wondering what you're hearing out of L.A. and the weird Harbaugh brother and the kind of bump that he might be immediately delivering that team, which I think is a fascinating team this year.
Well, I'm going to go in there. You know, I'm as curious as you are. Like,
yeah.
I want to
wear some khakis in there and hang out with the Harbster.
Yeah, I don't. It's funny because when you go in, you like make these requests to talk to, you know, can you get some time with the head coach? Can you get some time with the general manager? I'm more interested in the general manager aspect there only because my limited interaction with Jim dating back to his 49ers days was so poor. I don't know what it was. That guy, I can remember my last interaction with him down the stretch, and it was when things were going bad with Balky and York and San Francisco. But I just remember having this time with him and being like, I'm getting nothing. Like, this guy is so weird. I don't understand. Is he mad at me right now for no reason in the middle of the interview? Like, it's just his interactions are so intense, and I'm like, I don't feel like you really get. I feel like you get a lot of rhetoric, but then he also goes out there and he does things. Like, you know, when he tells you how important he thinks the offensive line is coming into the draft, and you're like, is this for real? Is he going to draft an offensive line with this pick? And then he does.
Yep.
So you're like, oh, he was telling me the truth. Like, it's hard to know, like, with him at any given time, whether he's just doing the rah-rah stuff or he's being completely honest with you. He keeps you off kilter, which is, it's that alone is probably an interesting reason to want to talk to him. But I can't tell you right now in terms of like the Chargers that I know. Well, what I know about Jim is that he has a shelf life with people in the building. He will burn you out after a few years because of just how he, you know, operates, what he brings to the table. Yeah, how he is as a person. And I'm curious to see whether that's still who this guy is on the NFL level. Like, not that he wasn't that way in Michigan, but that to me is the, you know, everybody, when he started to dip his toe back out there, like, hey, I might go back to the NFL, you know, anybody who knew him in the league was like, okay, get it done fast. Because after 3-4 years, there are going to be people who are just like, I can't do this. I can't deal with this guy on a daily basis. I'm curious if he's still that guy now.
That's going to be fascinating. Charles,
I bet, yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's going to be fascinating. He finally did get it done at Michigan. I mean, he's a good coach. Charles, thank you, my friend. Are you coming, by the way? Are you coming here soon or what? When are you coming to Nashville?
I'm still in figuring out. I'm through early August, and now I'm making some – I got to figure out if I'm coming through Nashville or Minnesota, or there's a few different teams that – I've yet to reach out to, so I'm still figuring out. But yeah, right. Definitely possibly. If I do come, though, I want to see you do the PK impression in front of Paul.
I do it
all the time. This is how he talks. What do you want from me?
I mean, I could be standing next to him and think, why is he doing a Joe Pesci impression for people?
I mix it up, you know. I do a little Jersey, a little Boston, you know. I think you got to have a range of PK.
I hate Boston, so he does Boston
impression. Right, which is good. All right. Thanks, Charles. We'll talk to you next week.
Good talking to you.
All right. Take these guys.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. Lots of good stuff there. We'll react to that coming up next. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3. The game. The game, as a matter of fact. We're broadcasting, by the way, from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Welcome back in. Reacting to Charles Robinson. First of all, Paul, the Harbaugh stuff is fascinating. I mean, it's an amazing... First of all, the contrast between the brothers. I don't think people adequately, and I know I'm saying this in the wake of Harbaugh winning a national championship at Michigan. So, you have to give them all the credit for that. There is some, you know, maybe some funny stuff in there. But regardless, I mean, look, he brought that program to 3 straight Big Ten championships, beat Ohio State 3 straight times. I mean, he got it done there when they cut his pay and were just so close to firing him. And 99% of Michigan fans wanted him out, and he leaves, you know, with a championship. But I think there's such a huge gap between brothers. I mean, you look at what John Harbaugh has done and the consistency. And some of that is the organization too, but he's a huge part of that consistency where, I, to me, that's one of the model franchises in pro sports, and he is central in that. And is it consistent?
Calm,
like, again, there's no way that
unwavering.
Jim. Yeah. I mean, like, they look alike, and they may, I guess in some way, you know, they may share some football philosophy and some, you know, some talent for doing it. But really, there's a huge gap to me in those two guys. And I'm just fascinated to see how it's going to work out here with Harbaugh, second time around in the NFL. Maybe it will be different.
Maybe they could have each gone either way, too, depending on the environments they wound up in. But it certainly seems John is the was going to be a calmer, more collected guy, and that Jim is more obnoxious, in your face, power, control guy. That wasn't going to work with Ozzie Newsome. You weren't going to get hired by Ozzie Newsome with that kind of philosophy. So John was clearly different coming out of Philadelphia as an assistant. And, you know, things went south with Jim in San Francisco pretty quickly. Got out of there, had success there, but got out of there. Had success in Michigan ultimately.
Eventually. But, I mean, he came in, it was like, here come all the titles, and it was bad for many years. Again, it got very close. He gets the pay cut, and then they break through, and it's like, now give me my money. Give me the money back that you took from me.
And I'm getting out of here before.
And there were a lot of NFL teams, by the way, that passed on him before this happened.
Yeah, in other forays into the market. Minnesota, right?
he tried.
Wanted it.
Well, he wanted Minnesota.
Right.
Yes.
And so now, you can't blame the Chargers, who are very much second fiddle in that market, renters in a stadium, second class citizens, for getting a name coach and trying to flash. He's not going to be shy in the LA market or anything like that. You want to compete with McVay. He's a guy that brings you that. But as Charles said, and as you're indicating, it's probably a 3 or 4 year thing. It's not, you don't picture him parking behind that desk for 10 or 12 years.
The good thing is you've got a very top of the league in talent, in my mind, quarterback in his prime. So it's the type of situation where, and you still have a lot of good talent on defense too. It's still a talented roster. It's not like the roster for a couple of years. I feel like people were looking at that roster like, how many more teams are more talented than that team?
It was a AFC championship game talented roster. It's probably not that now, but give them 2 years, and I think they should be pretty good. And his first two picks here were Ault and who? McConkey, right? I like his chances, right? I like his chances based on the resume. I like his chances because he's different than most of the coaches who are coming in who are likable but cookie-cutter mold now in the, you know, a lot of guys who are getting hired are very similar. And with good reason, because a lot of them have had success.
It hasn't not worked yet, like badly, right? Other than, I guess you could say, unless you want to count Hackett. If you count Hackett in that group.
Hackett was a disaster.
Then a
really bad disaster.
But I can't think of another one that really was like, oh my gosh, what have you done in terms of one of these hires from that general philosophy and tree.
The young offensive mind connected to LaFleur or Shanahan has been a pretty good formula.
Harbaugh and Sean Payton in the same division. It would be fun, like, if they were, I mean, they're going to play twice, but like that's quite a just in terms of ego and personality and you know, controversy. That's a heck of a
combo. You got Harbaugh, Sean Payton, and then Andy Reid is kind of the...
Well, Reid and Pierce are very likable, right. And then you got Harbaugh and Payton, yeah.
It's that's a good division to watch, for sure. And you know they're going to be on TV a lot. Kansas City's on TV a lot, you presume. Divisional games will be on TV a lot. I'm sure the Chargers got their chances at national TV with Harbaugh in place. Harbaugh and Herbert are TV quality, make for TV quality games.
Hashtag Herbaugh if it works out.
Herbaugh?
Herbaugh t-shirts? What do you think?
Let's see. You not go bad. Ahead and put some money in on that.
Okay. All right. We come back.
Friend on some finance that project.
Oh, wait. I need to
sell some tickets?
False start, because the Game Summer Ticket Tour is back. Join our own Joe Dubin.
The Dube.
Or actually, no. We do have the Summer Ticket Tour, but that happened yesterday, did it not? Yes, that happened yesterday. I'm reading this, but it happened yesterday. But you can find more details on the Summer Ticket Tour, because there's a lot of great concerts, and also you can get signed up for tickets to a Preds home game, Sounds game, Big Machine, Music City Grand Prix at Nashville.com/tour. We come back. It's rant time. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
What's up? This is Scott Stapp from Creed, and you're listening to Robbie and Rox Road on 102.5 The Game.
Okay. Did I say Rox Road right?
Rex Road.
Rex Road. Okay, let me do that again.
No worries.
What's up? This is Scott Stapp from Creed, and you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road on 102.5 The Game.
There it is. The raw, the original, because we have some mashups of that, but I like that. I like the no worries. The Haley throws in there. Oh, man.
You guys would be really good friends.
Maybe we would be. I mean, look, I like you. I wouldn't want to hear any music that you produce. There's nothing wrong. It's okay.
I'm not a producer of music.
Well, right. But, you know, some people are and shouldn't be, but it's fine. So today, Paul Kuharsky is going to, here on this final day of the week, final 3 days of you filling in for Robbie here this week, you've got something to say.
Well, look, I do a lot of, they call it doom scrolling. I guess they call it doom scrolling because you're doomed to a life of just sitting and scrolling. I mean, I enjoy it. It brings me joy.
What doom scroll? What the heck is that?
I just sit on my phone and scroll through reels. You know, it's kind of the alternative to watching TV, watching short clips.
Why is it called doom scrolling, though?
I think because you're doomed to a life of not doing things other than sitting in front of your phone.
Okay. All right, I know people like this.
I get sucked into some of the things that are advertised on my scroll, which is what they're really good at,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so I think I show a good amount of restraint at not buying these things. I don't show a good amount of restraint at not clicking into the ad and watching the video. And when you click into the ad and watch the video, then you're shown, then this shows up more and more frequently on your scroll.
Right.
And so I admit to having a curiosity about this U relax, U, the letter U with the umlaut. I'm generally not a fan of the umlaut. But in this instance, and I'm showing it on the video things, I was attracted to this. It sells itself kind of as a alternative to alcohol. Right? And
okay.
I get hangovers. I like a nice cocktail, but ultimately it bothers me.
Yeah, at our age, it takes like a drink and a half to get a hangover.
Right. So sure. I thought, like, well, if this is what it claims to be, and that's a big if, I know, but, you know, spend a couple bucks, try it out. You relax. It's called the calming tonic. Now, who can you think of more than me that needs a calming tonic?
Yeah, I'd like you
to try
it.
Hey. When I ease into my leather chair at night with the TV on and doing some doom scrolling with the Yankees falling apart, I'll have a nice calming tonic.
Right? Okay.
So I ordered the calming tonic, and it arrived while I was at the baseball tournament in Atlanta. So I get the calming tonic, and I'm reading. There's a lot of instructions I'm showing you. There's a note card
with a lot of information.
So it tells you, you know, shake it, don't stir it for maximum effect. You know, you can mix it with other stuff than water. And then the last item, it says, this is very concerning to me. I'm very struck by this. Feel the tingles. After consuming, you may notice a gentle numbing sensation inside your mouth that can last up to 15 minutes. This is just the high-quality kava doing its thing. Now, when I bought the product, it said nothing of mouth numbing. Okay? I was not looking for a mouth-numbing experience.
A nice calming,
I was looking for a calming
experience.
Tonic.
Right. Yeah.
But I didn't want a dentist-like experience.
Right. You put food in your mouth, just falls all over your face. Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Actually, that's a good effect. It keeps me from snacking for those 15 minutes after I have my calming tonic. So I had it last night, and I thought to myself, well, I'm going to beat this numbing sensation in my mouth by sipping it through a straw and minimizing how much of my mouth actually gets the tonic. This evasive tactic was not effective as my mouth was numbed by my relax calming tonic. I did find it somewhat calming, but I did not like the numbing sensation.
How's it taste?
Of my mouth.
It tastes good?
It's a berry flavor, mixed berry. So it tasted like a sweet, but not overly sweet, little berry drink.
Like vodka cranberry type thing or something?
Like, yeah, but it doesn't taste like any alcohol was in it. It
right.
just tastes like a little
be,
berry
But it's
drink.
Supposed to be a replacement in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So am I taking this to a bar and ordering 6 ounces of water and mixing this in while you have a nice cocktail?
Bourbon?
Or some of the beer that gives you gout? I don't know. But am I going to slur my speech while we have drinks because I've got a numb mouth? Maybe.
I guess that's a different way of making you slur if you're numb as opposed to drunk.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Since right. you're not legitimately drunk, we're going to help you seem drunk. So I have 10% off going forward if I like this. I'm going to try maybe two. Maybe I'll go crazy. Instead of having one, I'll have two, and I'll report back next Wednesday how it's going. But the numb mouth thing, they really did not mention at all when I was making the purchase. And that's why it's my primary complaint here is I think you're leaving out key data in the purchasing that then is on the giant note card of information once it's in my mailbox.
Yeah, Dylan on the text line, which all of a sudden I have texts from the entire show have flooded my inbox.
Sweet.
Here.
It's about time you people
so
started talking.
So I'm going to go back through some of them. So sorry to all of you who have been weighing in and I didn't, I don't know, it's probably my laptop. Dylan says, PK just fell for a modern-day snake oil salesman. So
I do periodically fall for this. This is, as I used to mention on my own show all the time when I talked about falling for something, not a cleanse.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, so if it tastes good and there is some calming, like we take magnesium, right? Magnesium gummies before going to bed. Like there's a calm. I don't know if it really works, but you know, it's magnesium.
Placebo effect
magnesium
at the very least.
Well, magnesium's good for you, so something like that. But yeah, to numb your why is that?
It's a side effect of the kava. Now I need to study kava. Heck, is somebody out there?
Well, kava is supposed to be good.
Yeah, why?
Right? I don't know. I've heard people say kava is good. It's like that sal that everybody got into. Yeah, okay. It's a no. I just Googled kava now.
This is kava.
It's a restaurant
chain. K-A-V-A, yeah. C-A-V-A is a restaurant chain. And this leads me back to a story. If my wife is listening, she'll immediately turn off the radio.
It's a Pacific crop.
But at Columbia, kava was the Columbia Ambulatory something service. It was the paramedics on campus.
Right.
And one time a girl named Victoria, who was not a big drinker, had a big drinking night. And there were some steps outside our dorm that she didn't negotiate well, and she fell and really smashed in her teeth. And we tried to care for her. And my role was that I called kava.
Wow.
So I became
fit. It all comes full
circle. I always announced, I called kava. So now every time we see the kava restaurant, I go to my wife and son, Did I ever tell you guys about the time that I called Kava for Victoria when she smashed in her face? And they're like, oh, my God, the Kava.
Oh, jeez. It's like the right tackle story.
So I'll keep you. I know you all want to update. I'll keep you updated on you relax. And it makes it sound like the numbing, you might get used to it so it doesn't become a thing.
I mean, good. Well, I mean, maybe you'll talk less. I mean,
but listen, if you're selling this product, I think you got to reveal that it's mouth numbing in the sales pitch.
I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right. All right, when we come back, we get back into football. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation, talking Titans. Robbie Rexer, 102.5, 106.3 of the game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.